From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and we all know that the truth will set you free, but the question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? How long are you willing to keep going through life the same way you've been going through life, feeling the same pains, the same fears, the same emptiness, the same longings, and not achieve what you know you were born to be in this world? And that's what we deal with this on this show all the time. I take a holistic approach, which means body, mind, and spirit. And to me, without the balance of body, mind, and the spiritual components of who we are, without that balance, then therapy and our growth process is not working on the whole self. And so that's what's meant by holistic approach to psychotherapy. So I'm one of those therapists that is not shy about talking about spirituality, about God, about however you define that higher power. I'm a therapist that is aware of sometimes the pain that's been caused throughout our life by organized religion, by different approaches to spirituality in our lives, or the lack of in our lives. And to me, the fact that most of us are longing for that, and if it hasn't been a part of our development early on, then many of us find ourselves missing and searching for something that may feel very aloof, but we know there's something there. Now, today, my guest is actually somebody who's been on the show before. It goes back to July 24th of last year. And we, at that time, talked about his book, Apprentice of the Heart, Lessons in Life Only Love Can Teach. His name is Guy Finley. And we had a really good discussion back then. And he has a new book out called Let Go and Live in the Now, Awaken the Peace, Power, and Happiness in Your Life. And in my, as I was putting this together, I came up with a title for an article and possibly for a book if it's not out there already, and it's called Different Voices, One Truth. That's what came to me, because as I was reading Let Go and Live in the Now by Guy Finley, I was aware that there was a resonance to everything he was saying. And if you've read a lot of other books, you've heard a lot of the same tenets. But the importance, like the issue of letting go, Jerry Jampolsky, Love is Letting Go of Fear, Being in the Now, Be Here and Now with Ram Dass. And you can go on and on and on with so many titles and so many authors that even go back to antiquity. But the importance of the fact to me that there are so many books basically helping people awaken, saying similar or the same things, because there is only one truth. And that truth to me is that love is the healing factor and love is spirit. And as we get back to that wisdom and that knowingness, the healing takes place. It's not something in the sense we have to learn how to do. It's something we have to embrace and get into the now of it, because it's something that already exists within us. We've all been born with that inner knowledge, the inner wisdom, and that connected to spirit and love. Now, again, you know, you're listening to this show, and I'm a psychotherapist, and I'm using words that you might hear from ministers or other types of teachers and stuff, but to me, every teaching modality is a ministry. And Guy Finley is no less that minister, that teacher, that author. And that purveyor of the truth that I'm talking about. So I want to welcome Guy Finley back to the show, and I'm very grateful that you're here again. Guy, you there?
I'm here, Stuart.
Well, thank you again for taking your time. I really enjoyed the time we spent back in July. I thought it was very, I felt very connected to you, and I felt very connected to what you were teaching, and I felt that there was a real camaraderie between us.
I enjoyed our conversation, Stuart.
Let's talk about this current book. We have the issue of, I mean, you heard in my introduction, you know, the issues of letting go and being in the now are not new things, obviously. I mean, the old saying, everything old is new again, comes around from time to time. But the way you put it in your book, the way you get to the basic issues, and the way there's this continuity and flow to the book from waking people up to what it is to let go and what being in the now is, I think will resonate and does resonate for a lot of people, and especially a lot of people who may not have gotten it from reading other books. So can you give us an example of what it means to let go and how learning to let go can help us to change our lives for the better?
I think that a good way to initiate this conversation would be to touch on an idea, actually, that I discussed just last night at the foundation here where I live in Southern Oregon. And the essence of the talk is that whenever we have an unhappiness that lingers on in our lives, and one that as it does, makes us begin to feel as though, and we've all known something like this, begins to feel as though darkness itself has won the whole day. What we need to understand and find not just comfort from, but a willingness to work within, is that the reason that any unhappiness of ours, any stress or sorrow, lingers on, is because we have agreed, without knowing it, to live in a world that is smaller than our potential to let go of what's troubling us. We're like, remember that old, when you were a kid, and I hope the listeners can remember this, do you remember that Chinese finger puzzle? Do you remember that, Stuart?
You mean with that round thing that you put your fingers in and the more you pull
it
apart,
it was kind of a reed-like thing, and you put two fingers in, one from both hands, one, you know, one on each hand.
Right, and it was amazing because everybody knew what it was and everybody fell for it.
Still fell for it. And of course, the trick was there that the more you tried to pull your hands apart, the more that finger puzzle tightened around the two fingers.
Mm-hmm.
So that and of course, the trick was, and it's a beautiful little teaching tool, that you can't release yourself by pulling against yourself. And when we talk about letting go, what we're talking about is that it isn't the world that has somehow conspired to take from us our happiness. It isn't someone or some condition that is restricting and binding us. It is our ideas about ourselves and about the world we walk through. And when these ideas about ourselves, these images and pictures that have been crafted not just over our own lifetime, but societally, literally, culturally, that when they run into what life brings to us, then in that moment we feel as though life is trying to punish us. But we can, and I know this is what we're going to talk about today, we can prove that life never punishes an individual. What life does is produce opportunities for that individual to transcend who he has been, who she has been up until that moment, as defined by those ideas, so that we can start seeing that what we have to do here is not try to get more power to change conditions, but become awake to the part of ourselves that has left us feeling powerless because it insists that somehow or other we get what we think we have to be happy.
Mm-hmm. And those things that we usually think we need to be happy is usually something outside ourselves, another person, a thing, something that we can buy or some semblance of something external. And I know that in your book and in your teachings, what we're really striving for is to look inside. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. And deeper still, because what we're interested in here is understanding that the reason that we become, and we talk about, you know, we say, well, I have to learn to let go of this bad relationship. I have to learn to let go of this self-defeating set of thoughts about myself, whatever it may be that a person is dealing with. When we're talking about letting go, the thing or the person, the condition, is really incidental, Stuart.
Mm-hmm.
Because the issue is that what I am clinging to is the idea, the sense of myself that I derive through a person. For instance, let's say a man or a woman is in an abusive relationship with another human being. And all of us have known people who, in abusive relationships, stay in them. And we might even say to that person, what's wrong with you? Or we may not be able to see ourselves. Because sometimes you can be in an abusive relationship with your own career.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always justifying what we're going through, the stress, the sorrow, because something in us that is unseen is so totally identified with the sense of ourself that if should we lose that person or that path, whatever it may be, that we think we're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact of the matter is, and it's a beautiful fact, is that the reason we're having the stress and strain that we are is because life is saying, hey, Stuart, hey, guy, time to let go of this notion of yourself that without this person, without this condition, you don't amount to anything. Then we can begin to realize that life is asking us to find a whole new sense of ourselves as opposed to being exteriorized in a new interior understanding that who we are is not determined by what we have around us or who approves of us.
Or what we do.
Exactly.
Because a lot of times it's the same thing. If someone loses their job, gets fired, their whole sense of identity was focused around that.
Yes.
Or with the tsunami, with 9/11, with the floods here in California and stuff, people lose their things. And for, very often it's a wake-up call for just this lesson for some people.
If,
and those that get it say, you know what? Those things did not define me.
If we're willing to let life, I have a saying that the lessons in life ride in on the back of events.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we're willing to let these events be for us revelatory, meaning help us see ourselves and understand ourselves, as opposed to turning them into wrecking balls, then we can realize that we can use this breakup, whatever it may be, for a wake-up call. But the key here, and it runs all the way through Let Go and Live in the Now, is being able to recognize, and it's really fundamental, that the world that we live in is actually set up for us to succeed as human beings. That any time we're capable of it, willing to go through it, we can see for ourselves that the only thing that stands in our way between a life that is stress-free and successful versus stressful without success is our level of understanding. And Stuart, every one of us is created to transcend what we understand literally every moment of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. It's kind of like what you're saying is something I say very often, and that is most of our emotional pain is not caused by what we think it is. It's usually caused by our resistance to letting go and surrendering.
Yes.
It's the resistance that's causing the pain.
And I'll add to that, and the listeners, if you just think through this, think now, is it possible? No, I'm going to start back a little further. I don't think you would find a human being on this planet, and if you did, then they're already dead, who would say that the purpose of this life is not to grow. The purpose of this life is that we're intended to become more creative, more loving, wiser, better human beings. If that's not the purpose, then I don't know what it would be. It certainly can't be defined by possessions and powers that we obtain in society, because these things are stripped away all the time. And if that's true, that we're here to grow in spirit, in our minds, in our hearts, that means that we are on a continual and invited to take part in a continual learning process, a process of discovery. And here's the point. it is impossible to learn and discover what is true if we resist any condition at all.
Mm-hmm.
Resistance is antithetical to discovery. So whenever we resist a moment in our lives, it's the same as saying, I don't want to learn from it. And when I say I don't want to learn from something, it's the same as saying, in essence, I'm not interested in growing. And what, in this world, it's evident that things are either growing and developing or they're withering and dying. And it's our choice. That's what free will is, whether or not we want to participate in a process of discovering more in truth about ourselves or we want to let that go, unfortunately, and just give up, literally.
Right. Well, I think I know that in your work and my work as a therapist, per se, most people end up getting into therapy because they're in such pain and life is not working, or they feel an emptiness that scares them, or they know that change is imminent or essential for their growth, and it's that pain that usually leads them into therapy, and it's that pain that often chases them away from therapy, because you know, if they're really going to start the process, it means surrendering sometimes to the abyss in order to actually realize that there's no fear to be found in there, because that's where the light exists.
Yeah. In the book, Let Go and Live in the Now, there's actually a chapter section that proves, if a person's willing to see it, that we're literally missing out on 50% of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And just to make the point quickly, the 50% of our lives that we're missing is the half of our lives during which we say to ourselves, I wish that just didn't happen.
That we're living in regret.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, something happens and we go, and we don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that we don't want, we refuse, which means half of our life, during those times when someone says something or life doesn't go the way we want it to go, we go, I wish that weren't happening. I wish that didn't happen. And here you have a person who has literally cut themselves off from half of their life. And to the point further, that the half of the life that they've cut themselves off from, these moments that we resist and wish would go away, those very moments are the ones that are inviting us to recognize that, in essence, who we have been and what we've understood has taken us as far as that can go. But the limit of our present view is not the limit of our possibility. So that when we are willing to let life teach us what it wants to, we not only exit those moments that we didn't want to have happened to us, Stuart, but we come out a wiser human being, capable of understanding to a much better degree our relationships with other human beings and what the purpose of our life is itself.
Right. You know, I was just talking yesterday with a friend of mine who, like myself, has spent a good time in the mid-80s to present time dealing with the AIDS epidemic. And it's not the type of work I thought I would be doing in my career or in my life. But what I've heard so often from people when they have been diagnosed and are challenged with this or cancer or anything is that very often what other people say is, gee, that would be an impossible thing for me to deal with. I just assume die right away and stuff like that. Most of them that I know actually had that diagnosis as a wake-up call to finding that peace and serenity within them, and they became the teachers along the way.
Yes.
And in my own experience, being HIV negative and being the caregiver and being the friend and being the guide for so many of friends, I very often had to ask myself, why is this happening to me? You know, how many more bedsides can I be at? I mean, during the peak of it in the 80s and early 90s, I mean, there were hundreds upon hundreds of friends, colleagues, clients that I watched die. And the way it elevated me and what it taught me about myself and the guidance it gave me to move in certain directions, you know, the pain was unbearable and the lessons were unimaginable in terms of moving me higher and deeper into myself. So we never know, like you're saying, when we're faced with pain, we can choose to wallow in it and see ourselves as victims of it, or we could see it as our next challenge, which I know is what you're saying.
Very much so. Very much so.
I want to read one excerpt here, which I think kind of restates what you're saying. And it's actually from one of your promotional materials, but I know it's an excerpt from the book. And the quote is, "We tell ourselves that we want a new life. In our minds, we see ourselves reclaiming our right to live without limitations. We see ourselves walking away from destructive relationships and letting go of negative thoughts and feelings. And this is the very problem. We talk to ourselves about a fresh start and even plan the path we will take when things get right. But that's it. We think, but rarely act. We dream, but won't awaken to the one fact we must face if we would make a fresh start. The new beginning we long for is now or never. There is no such thing as tomorrow for anyone who really has it in his or her heart to start over with life. There is only one place where we can hope to make a fresh start in life, and this has to be in that place where life itself is new all the time. But before we discuss where this fountain of fresh starts is found, we must grasp what may be a challenging idea. The true place of all new beginnings, the only one where it is possible for us to begin our life over anew, is, in reality, neither a place nor a time." What do you mean by that last statement? In reality, it is neither a place nor a time.
Oh, you stop reading now. Okay, what I mean by that is that we're talking about the true present moment, Stuart, now. And we have to back up just a little bit to understand that the way our lives are, what we experience, the way in which we meet everyone, everything, is because this brain of ours is a selective tool. It's an instrument that learns what its environment is about, who people are, by forming an image of them. So that when we meet someone, if we ever meet someone truly fresh, we don't have a preconceived idea about them because we're actually meeting them as they are. But very quickly, our mind will begin to fashion something through which then we know that person, so that we begin to think about the person. We begin to know them through our idea of them. We live now like that all the time. We rarely run into a condition, a person, that when we run into them, we don't refer to our ideas about them. And this is how the brain works.
Say that last statement again, though.
The brain works by fashioning an image of the thing it meets, because the brain is a thought machine, essentially. Mm-hmm. It knows through imagery. And it starts very young. We literally can't. We don't know something, in quotes, until this brain fashions an image of it with the content of our experience. And then from that content of experience, each time we meet that person or condition again, the brain refers to its own stored content.
Mm-hmm. In clinical terms, we're talking about projection.
Projection.
Right.
Which is,
in other words, we project onto this person we're just meeting what we perceive to be true about them.
It's literally thought referencing thought,
mm-hmm,
and calling that thought the person, which it's not. That's what it means to live in thought. We have a thought about the now. We have a thought about the present moment. When people talk about living in the present moment, their eyes will light up and they'll feel good about themselves because they're seeing in their mind's eye this image that they have of what it means to be present to themselves. Well, no image is present,
mm-hmm,
nor is any self or level of it that sits and thinks about now actually in the now. It's living from imagination. That which I'm talking about in this book is to help the reader begin to understand the difference between being in the now versus thinking about it.
Or living in illusion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, when we are actually present to ourselves, which, by the way, we can all do right now, this very moment while I'm talking on the phone, We can all come back to ourselves, drop thought, simply be aware of our heart, our mind, everything that's passing through us, the temperature of the air around us, just become awake for a moment. That now is not a time and it is not a place. It is a spirit. It is an actual emanation, an exclamation. It is a living force that we are in, like fish live in water. But just like fish don't know they're in water, they don't know water is what sustains them and that they move through, neither do we know that we live in and are sustained by this animated energy, this divine life that is the now, that is never not now. Mm-hmm. We're just not awake in it. We're sleeping, and we're sleeping in dreams, in illusions that keep us from having the fulfillment and the creative life that comes from naturally participating in this living now.
If I get you right, and speaking now as a rebirther, it sounds to me that you're talking about that existence that we all experience as newborns, where we had no past and we had no concept of linear time. There was only the moment of what was drawing our attention now and now and now, and an infant knows what now is. It has no concept of before or after, at least not consciously. And in my work as a rebirther, as a therapist, it really is about getting back to that place of innocence, of that place where the mind's not cluttered, like you say, with the projections and the interpretations and, histories and things like that. It's about getting back to, like what rebirthers do, the beauty of rebirthing, which is breath work, is if you're just focusing on the inhale and the exhale, then you're just focusing on this moment and what the inhale and the exhale is. And amazing things start healing just from being in present time, because in rebirthing, you start dropping away the emotional baggage. As you start staying more and more connected to the now, other things start dropping away, and they come through consciousness usually to do that. So you let go.
And
you start vibrating to be in the now. And I think that's really what you're talking about here also.
Well, and as we work to find a language that allows the ideas to be in common, it's as though, Stuart, a man lives in a house, and in this house, he found, so to speak, in it, characters that are destructive to it, who leave their trash around, who set fires, who denigrate the place in general ways, and the person living in the house with characters like that, because that's all they ever knew, assume that life must include giving permission to these characters to be in one's house. And what being in the now is about is not only the recognition that these characters, these thoughts and feelings, to make it clear, that I keep company with, that the only reason that I'm keeping company with them is because I'm living from a part of myself that is in itself a thought and a feeling. I wish I could make this clear. I'm going to try again.
You're doing fine, but go ahead and restate that, it, because every time you restate it, someone else wakes up.
Yeah, that we are meant to live in a house that is fresh and clean without compromising characters in it by simply being present to ourselves. And last way to restate this, it takes a long time and a lot of conscious pain before we start to realize that even in the moment that I'm speaking, that our minds are always bringing up something about who we've been, what we know, what needs to be done to handle whatever it is that we think is going on, and that most of what it brings up that we're now going to call remembering, most of what it remembers turns out to be something that we don't need to be involved in at all,
mm-hmm.
like remembering what someone did to us that hurt us.
Mm-hmm.
But the mind brings it up by itself when it's triggered through association, through events. Mm-hmm. And we don't know yet that it is given to us to, if you want, to remember what we want to remember. How on earth did it get to the point where a person believes that just because their mind wants to bring up some misery that took place 20 years ago or 2 minutes ago, that they have to sit and welcome that character into their house? Mm-hmm. They don't. It is our right to live in the present moment where the only thing that's permitted into it to be in relationship with is that which the light in us agrees to and is willing to embrace because we see the goodness of it. That's what I wanted to say.
So if I'm understanding it correctly, our minds will latch onto anything that, in a sense, reconnects us with the past,
yes,
or fear of the future.
Yes.
That takes us out of the now.
Yes.
And the healing process comes when we're able to see our mind and say, thank you for sharing, and not get attached to what the mind's doing and get back to being in the breath and in the moment.
Yeah, you see, and that's right, Stuart, because what we're saying here is that the healing takes place when we stop hurting ourselves unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
See, so it's not like we're looking for a power to heal ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're recognizing where it is that we've given power away,
right,
to something inside of ourselves whose very existence, which is this mind continually comparing itself to other people, looking back over the past or projecting a future by which it produces fear, that it, in its own activity, is the source of our ache. And when we simply drop the activity because we're awake to the ache, lo and behold, I don't need healing anymore because I literally don't hurt myself anymore.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm not in judgment anymore, because I'm not holding on to history, because
I'm not in time. That's right. I've literally stopped living in the world of time that thought generates and creates as it revisits and prognosticates. I've literally stepped out of that into the present moment where thought is seen as a tool as opposed to the very source of myself.
Mm-hmm. Which gets me to, like I told you before we went on the air, to the part of the book that really resonated me, and it's about the celestial birthright.
Yes.
Okay? And on page 146, you write, but we have another nature other than the one that we were just talking about, one that entitles us, if we will claim this celestial birthright, to live in another world through which this stream of time runs. This other world is the invisible realm of the timeless now, as you call it.
Yes.
Awakening to this timeless birthright of ours grants us the precious gift of being able to see that our present worries and fears are nothing more than the negative results of mistaking ourselves to be something far less than what we are in reality.
Yes.
And what we are in reality, I mean, that's the end of the quote. What we are in reality, to me, gets back to that innocence we were born into.
Yes.
I use the term, and it's not one that I've coined by any means, earth angels, that there are some of us that we know, even as kids, and I've said this many times on the show because I talk about this a lot, that some of us hold on to that knowledge, and people see it in us, even as we're young and children and growing up and stuff, and there's a knowingness when we meet someone else that's really connected to it, that essence of who we are, that we are a light and we're here to help other people wake up to that same thing. Those are the celestial beings, the earth angels, and it is everyone's birthright to have love and peace and be in that timeless now.
Yes, and I think, just to touch back on the section that you read, that one of the big, and I use the word problems in quotes, with our lives is that we have been conditioned to believe, to think, that peace is something that we create,
mm-hmm,
that love is something that we have to somehow produce.
Or find elsewhere.
Yeah, and it, that mindset, it's a faulty beginning, because by it the idea that I have to fill myself with peace or quietness or love, as opposed to recognizing that I am born with the quality in myself capable of being in relationship with that which already exists, sets me out on a path by which now I have to acquire people, possessions, powers, in order to give myself this idea that I have about something called peace or love, when it is the very foundation of the moment itself. That intelligence, that goodness, we are living in it, but are blinded by our own ideas about where to find it. It's such an important idea, Stuart, to recognize that we need not chase around, but rather wake up to the parts of us that are pushing us to look for something that already dwells in us.
But most of that thinking comes from what we've been taught.
Yes.
Obviously, through the media, through movies, the concept of romantic love.
Our parents, God bless them, on and on. The whole list goes,
exactly,
of course.
And all of that, those teachings, while I think are intended to help us by the people teaching it to us, actually gets us off track and is actually misleading us away from the path of what we already know to be true.
That's right.
Which is what you're saying, which is all of us, at our core and at our essence, don't need to be learning anything from outside ourselves. We just need to breathe, stay in the moment, and access the very things we spend most of our lives searching for on paths all over the place.
We are given, as human beings, a faculty that animals have at one level, which we'll just call simple awareness, and then we have higher awareness. Now, higher awareness, the ability to see ourselves as opposed to think about ourselves, is an extraordinary feature. There's a story in the book, Stuart, I don't know if you got through it far enough to see it, where this young fisherman lives in a village, and all the time there's problems, that is, can't get enough catch, so forth, but there's one old-timer, and he always seems to have all the fish that he needs to keep himself and his family happy. And one day the young man steals over the hillside and watches this old fisherman out there, and the reason that no one can catch enough fish to provide for themselves and their families is because there's always these squalls, these storms, and they refer to negative states later on in the book. Mm-hmm. And the young man watches the old-timer asleep in his rowboat out there in the middle of the bay when the storm comes in. The old man wakes up, stands there, looks around, and the storm stops, and the young man can't believe what he's seen. So he finally goes up to the old man, and he says, I saw a miracle. What on the earth just happened? What did you say that made the storm go away? And the old man says to the young man, he says, well, that, it's nothing. He said, I just said that this isn't my storm. This storm isn't mine. And when I said it, it goes away because it's not mine. Now, relative to all that we've been talking about, is that when we look at these storms of negative thoughts and feelings, they are always about something that we say life has brought to us that we don't want, that's interfering with us. But what it, that life, in quotes, is interfering with, and I want to really put this out to everybody to think about, how can life interfere with life? It's impossible. What it interferes with are these conditioned ideas, these thoughts and feelings that we've been taught unconsciously that tell us, again, that who we are and what it means to be happy is somehow related to making the world turn out the way that we were taught it ought to be in order to be happy. But when we recognize that the very root of these storms has to do with the way in which we meet life, then we don't have to try to make life change. We can let go of those parts of ourselves that are literally punishing us by clinging to these wrong purposes, false purposes that produce the pain that we cry out from. It's not my storm. Wouldn't that be nice? I mean, as an exercise, you know, next time somebody says something to you and you get negative, what if instead of trying to change them, we recognize at that moment that the storm we're feeling, the negative thoughts we're feeling, we're having at that moment, is because of an idea we have about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now the power's back in my hands. If I blame you, you've got the power.
It's along the lines of one of the lessons in A Course in Miracles that always made sense to me from the very moment is I could choose peace instead of this.
Yes.
You know, instead of buying into the storm, as you call it, my fears, my perception that I'm being injured or hurt, I could choose peace instead of this. I don't have to be at the effect of what's going on. That doesn't mean you don't deal with the realities that it entails. And that's an important concept that people sometimes misunderstand. Well, a lot of people say when they hear these spiritual or metaphysical ideas and that they're too unreal.
Yeah, you know, that's I'm so glad you brought that up because that's really critical.
Yeah.
Because we're not talking about someone walking around going, I choose peace, I choose peace, I choose peace, I choose peace. Because a person that walks around saying that is actually resisting the disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about resisting any disturbance. We're talking about awakening to the disturbance itself and recognizing that its cause is a lie.
Is the illusion.
Exactly.
Right.
See, and that's the beauty because then it isn't, when we say I choose peace, what we're really saying is that I can see the false cause of this conflict and I'm letting it go. And when I let go of the false cause, lo and behold, now I'm part of a real cause, which is peace itself to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's another part of the Let Go and Live in the Now book. I know you'll like this. It's a little poem that summarizes the section about fear. And the poem is, the feel is real, but the why is a lie. The feel is real, but the why is a lie. So we feel these things. I have a saying here at the Foundation Life of Learning where I teach that truth is a full contact sport. That when we want to truly change ourselves, learn what it means to be a different kind of human being, we're going to have to engage inside of ourselves a lot of things that we've been running from all of our lives. But we've been running from a ghost.
Right. That's the whole premise behind Tell the Truth Faster, is what you just said.
Yes.
You know, it is about how often we run from the truth, how much fear we have of telling the truth, because, and like I say often, a lot of times people will tell a lie to someone under the pretext, well, I didn't want to upset them or hurt their feelings, when the truth is, I didn't want to deal with the discomfort that I would have to deal with by speaking the truth and allowing, in your terms, the storm to take place and then grow from there and move from there. So people do everything they can to lie to themselves, to lie to others, to lie to God, to, you know, in a sense, lie to their bodies, to their soul.
Yes. That's right.
And telling the truth faster is that liberation. It's telling the truth, people tell me all the time, is exactly what you talk about when you say letting go.
Yeah.
When you finally speak that truth and you're no longer rehearsing it in your mind over and over again, what if, and how to say it and stuff like that. When you finally get it out and then start dealing with the ramifications of it, you can get past it.
Yeah.
And get back to the now.
Yeah,
as you're withholding the truth, you're not in the now.
You can, and all of us do meet people everywhere who say that they are, if you will, lovers of the light with a capital L, that they love the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that if we say we love the light, but don't love what the light reveals, then we're not true lovers of the light.
Uh-huh.
Because we have to love, if we love light, we love what light does.
Mm-hmm.
And what light does is reveal.
Right.
So that when we're in the present moment, which is the moment of light, its expression, that means that we're present to all that's going on in us. And I tell you, I wish there were a way to relay this to the listeners in an unmistakable fashion. We have in us something. This is that part we were talking about in the later section of the book, the celestial birthright, that would no more tolerate living with a negative attitude, negative thought, a fear, a worry, that would no more live with that than a rabbit would run into a lion's den. We're not meant to be compromised by those kinds of thoughts and feelings that visit us daily that wind up making us a victim.
Mm-hmm.
We're not here to be victims. We're here to be victorious in the kind of understanding that comes when we let the light do what it does in us,
right,
which is to reveal the truth. Then a rebellion, a right rebellion, is born inside of us, Stuart, where we're willing to risk whatever we have to because we realize that that's how we grow, by letting go of who we've been and not carrying it forward and trying to protect it.
And when that happens, and this is, you know, when we talk about our purpose of being here in the world, and I know it's a existential question you asked very early on in the book, that all of us are constantly asking, why are we here, what are we doing here, is that, to me, our purpose in being here is to get to that place of light, that we're not only in it, but we're reflecting it, and then become guides for others to it.
Yeah, that's a right idea. I like that, Stuart. That there's the very last chapter of Let Go and Live in the Now talks about how we are all intended to brighten the corner wherever we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we can only really do that when we ourselves, moment to moment, are being the transformers that we're intended to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that when these negative thoughts and feelings, which I want to throw this in, you know, negative thoughts and feelings do not really originate with us. There are forces unseen. We live in a world that's a million times greater in its invisibility than its visibility.
It's like saying we have to be taught to hate.
Yeah, and these things that pass through us, they're intended to be subjected to this light of awareness we've been talking about. And when they are, whatever was, if you will, formerly dark is made greater for the light that is passed into it. And when we ourselves are living like that, then wherever we go, even if we never say a word to another person, we have made the world a better place because we've worked at brightening it within ourselves through our relationship with this light.
Mm-hmm. It's like everybody who's listening out there can think of at least one person that they either know well or have been in the presence of an individual, that something about just being in their presence made them feel safer and more relaxed and warmer. And while I think most of us then misinterpret that person has something we don't have, and so we empower that person, as many people do with teachers and
yes.
therapists and,
yes.
you know, they, I want what they have type of thing. What's really happening is we're in the presence of something that's touching that part of us to help awaken it and remind us that we are that same light and that same energy.
Yes, that's right.
And that, to me, is an important aspect that, like you say, when we're looking outside ourselves for the love or for the fulfillment or to fill that empty space, the empty space is already filled with light if you just connect with it. And what those people do is to remind us. And if that person who we're looking at and in their presence is truly conscious, then they're not going to use that to manipulate others.
Yeah, let's bring it down just, you know, to some practical expressions of how we as individuals can help not only interiorly change ourselves, but the world that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a simple example. You're sitting at a table with five people, and somebody brings up a fearful thought. Somebody says something about what may happen tomorrow, or some negative comment about another human being. And in that moment, we all know what it's like. There's a part of us that wants to seize that negative thought or feeling and either blame or judge the person who said it or carry on that conversation. In other words, forward that darkness.
Well, for most of us, we do that because we are feeling like we belong and we're accepted by them then.
Okay. Whatever the reason is, at that moment, if we can be aware of the fact that, look, here's a little bit of darkness that just came out on the table and that's in this person and that I can feel it in myself, and I don't want to go against the grain here, but I have to understand that in that moment where someone has said or acted out something negative, it is my responsibility first within myself to no longer be the one who carries that out. And so what happens literally is that if I refuse, and I'll make it more personal, let's say I'm sitting and a thought comes up in my mind about something I'm afraid of. At that moment, can I see that the right thing to do with that fear is recognize that it's there, realize that it has no right to my mind or my voice, and instead of expressing it, bring it expressly into the light of that understanding, and then for a moment bear what I must when it doesn't get its way with me. And if I'll do that, in that moment that darkness is transformed, I am made a transformer of it, and anyone around me has a moment more of light because I haven't brought that darkness, I haven't incorporated it in myself or into the world. That's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. On a moment-to-moment basis, in all of our relationships, being the one where, if you remember that old saying, the buck stops here?
Yes.
Yeah. The negativity stops here. I'm not going to be the one who continues this conflict in this. Someone says something cruel to me. As a rule, the first thing we do is lash back. Can I recognize that the reason that person said the cruel thing is because they're in pain and that they awakened pain in me that I didn't know I had? Mm-hmm. And instead of being the purveyor of that pain and continuing that conflict, becoming conscious enough to let the light of my own understanding transform that pain into a completely different power by which now I'm no longer the person expressing that pain and I'm not going to punish someone else for having it awakened in me. Mm-hmm. And oh, Stuart, what a world we would have.
Yeah.
If we could understand all that we just said.
Yeah. That's a great place to stop here, because it really is about how all of us can take personal responsibility for bringing more light,
yes,
and more consciousness into the world, so
yes,
that there's not so much hate being taught and not so much killing and wars and all the other things that you know create so much fear on the planet. I want to use the last few minutes to give you an opportunity to let people know how they can get this book and more about the Life of Learning Foundation. I know you have a website. People can go to guyfinley.com.
Yeah, thank you, Stuart. Yes.
guyfinley.com.
Yes. Anyone interested in what we've been discussing, visit guyfinley.com. Just like Stuart said, G-U-Y-F-I-N-L-E-Y, guyfinley.com. And on the website, right on the homepage, Stuart, there's some free gifts. There's a free poster that we can either mail or you can download called Five Great Lessons in Learning to Let Go and Live in the Now. And the visitor can sign up for a free weekly key lesson, which our foundation sends out once a week, one helpful, powerful idea by which to remember our purpose and to fulfill it by working the way we've been talking about. All of my books, tapes, available on a secure website, guyfinley.com. And, Stuart, if this... Hello?
Hello.
Okay. And the visitor there can get these books. We ship free. And, of course, without saying, they're Let Go and Live in the Now on all the major shelves in the bookstores there, wherever you may live.
And I'm assuming Amazon also.
Of course.
Oh, cool. And... people can also go to my website, tellthetruthfaster.com, if you want to listen to the July 24th show that I did with Guy Finley on love. You could go there for it. And this today's show will be archived on tellthetruthfaster.com within the next week or so. And so you can keep going back and checking tellthetruthfaster.com, and you can get a direct link to guyfinley.com from my site and a little bit more about Guy. So I invite all of you to keep making use of the website, tellthetruthfaster.com, as a resource for information on all the topics that I've done over the last 3 years, because every show has been archived on there. So, Guy, I really want to thank you. I know that we could have done a whole show on each section of this book and then some. I really want to thank you, first of all, for not just this book, for being the conduit for so much valuable teaching and learning and light through all of your work and through all of your workshops as well as your writings, and for taking the time with us today on TellTheTruthFaster.com on KXAM.
Stuart,
so thank you so much.
And look forward to the next one.
And we will have a next one.
Okay.
So for all my listeners, I want to thank you for being part of this journey with me and walking this path with me and my guests. And if you want to reach me with any comments or questions, You can do that via TellTheTruthFaster.com. And I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Guy Finley again for being my guest. And reminding all of you that we'll be back here again next Saturday. So this is Stuart Altshuler on KXAM 1310 in Phoenix saying have a great weekend and keep telling the truth faster.